Morning. Today's daf and Bava Basra's Mem Tes. Two-thirds of the way done with the third parak of Bava Basra and Cheskas Habatim. We are in towards the end of Mem Chesem and Beis. We are in the middle of discussing a big sugya in this third parak, and that's Luy Vizovin. What if I force a sale? If I compel a sale, so is such a sale going to be registered as a good sale? So Rav Huna says it will be. Now, as we pointed out already a couple of times, we're not condoning such an action, meaning to compel somebody to do something against their will is obviously something which the Torah does not, as a value, appreciate or appropriate. But nevertheless, we're just simply describing the efficacy of the action. And if you force somebody to sell an item, so it's in fact going to be a good sale, why should that be? So the Gemara, Mem Ches, yesterday's daf, so the Gemara attempted to give a number as far as of why that should be. Either it's from Psukim, the Torah describes the carbon acceptable if you force the carbon, if the force of giving of the carbon. Gemara says that could be different. The Gemara says, what about Gite Nashim, where forced get is also going to be acceptable. The Gemara says that could also be different. Mitzvah Lashmo Divrei Chachamim. And then the Gemara, after throwing around some Svaras or some Rayas, some Psukim, the Gemara then settles on a Svara. And the Svara that the Gemara said in the course of yesterday's daf was that people, a forced sale is going to be a valid sale. Quoting the language of yesterday's Gemara, so agav unse gamar umakne, because generally speaking, yes, it's under duress, but still, in other words, you're still going to get some sort of compensation for that which you sold. You're getting money, and as a result of that, so that that even though it's under duress and even though you were compelled, nevertheless, the sale is going to be an acceptable sale. That was the Gemara yesterday. The Rashbam pointed out a couple of times in yesterday's daf that yes, the sale is going to be a valid sale, but the Rashbam points out it has to be a sale. Like let's say somebody compels you to give a gift. So there, you don't say agavun se gamar makne that I was under duress, but you know what I mean. But okay, it's going to be good anyway. No, it's not going to be good. And the Rashbam points out, in other words, this svara of Rav Huna only works in the event that you're going to get some sort of compensation for that which you are being forced to give over. But in a scenario in which you're not getting any compensation in return, so then we don't have such a svara, and so this is only going to be really limited to a sale. That's what we said over the course of yesterday's daf. I'm going to start the Gemara again from the words Tavi Talala Papi. We did this yesterday, but I'm just going to go back a little bit. It's really could be like the beginning of today's daf, today's sugya. So we are on Memches Amud Beis. We're more than halfway down in the Amud. The first word in the line is Shaviva Rabban Labilasa Bilaznus, and we are starting with Tavi. So Tavi was he was a tough guy, just a rough personality. And Talad Papi Akinara. So either he hung Papi up on a tree, or he wanted to force Papi to sell a tree. In either event, it was he forced Papi, and Vizavin and Papi in fact sold on account of the fact that that Papi was under duress. And Chasam Rava Baravuna Amodav Ashkalata. Now Rava Barbachana signed in two documents regarding the sale. One, he signed on the actual sale document itself. It was forced, but he signed on it. And two, he also signed on the Shtar Moda. Now I really number them out of order, meaning in the way the Gemara presents it, he first signed on the Moda, and then afterwards he signed on the Ashkalta. And as I'll discuss later this morning, it's important. The order is important. So let me present it now in the correct order. First, he signed on the Moda, then he signed on the Ashkalta. Now, the Moda basically is serving notice. What notice are you serving? I am under duress. I am not selling it with my compliance. And I don't want the sale to be a good sale, but I'm just being forced to do so. So, what was the reaction of the Amoraim to such a document? To both documents, actually. So, Amar Rav Huna, so the Gemara tells us what Rav Huna feels. Man dechasim amoda shapir chasim, uman dechasim ashkalta shapir chasim. So, Rav Huna says they're both legitimate documents. You sign on the shtar moda, that is a serving of notice that you're being forced, so that's good. And if you're signing on a document, on a sale document, which you know is a forced sale, that's also good. So, the Gemara says, so Rav Huna says both signatures on both documents work, and they're good. So Manav Shach, the Gemara says, now wait one second, I'm confused. Gemara says, now the two things can't coexist. Meaning, once you have a moda, so then the sale document is not good, because the moda is going to be a negation of the sale document. The moda is there to tell you that I'm under duress, and I, even though I'm going to agree, but I'm only going to agree because my arm's going to get twisted. But I am not in agreement. So once you have a moda being signed, so then the ashkalta is not going to be good. And if it's just the Ashkalta that was being signed, so the Moda that's done any time afterwards is not going to be good as well. So you, these two documents cannot coexist. It's either going to be one or the other. So Hachi Kamar, so the Gemara says, right. The point's very well taken. And the Gemara says, this is what Rav Huna meant. Ilav moda'a, man dechazim ha'ashkalta, shapir chasim. Yeah. In other words, if there wasn't a moda'a, and it was just an ashkalta, and it was just a document that was proof of a sale, even though the sale was a for sale, so that's going to be good. Why is that going to be good? The Gemara goes on to say, Rav Huna letame. Because this is Rav Huna consistent with what he said yesterday, and what he said at the end of yesterday's daf. The Amar Rav Huna told you of a zavin zvine zvine, that if a person has a for sale, the sale is going to be a valid sale. So that is why Rav Huna was okay with either of these documents, meaning if it's a moda, that's fine. That's legitimate. You're being forced to sell, so you're going to serve notice prior that you were being forced to sell. And if it's just a shtar shkalta, if it's just a document being proof to a sale, even though the sale is forced, that's also good in of itself. Now, of course, not without the moda. I'm sorry, that's without the moda. All right, any. All right, and continuing now, we're on the very bottom of Mem Chesam Adbeis, and the Gemara now continues this discussion with the question, is this correct? Is this accurate? Va'amar Rav Nachman, the Gemara says, we have a statement by Rav Nachman. Now, even though Rav Nachman and Rav Huna are two different Amorim, but the Gemara is of the position that they have to coexist, meaning that we know the halachas like Rav Huna, we've discussed that over the course of yesterday's daf, the halachas like Rav Huna, for sale is going to be a good sale, and on the other hand, we have another statement coming from Rav Nachman, and that is the following. Ha'edim Sha'amru Amanu Hayu. If witnesses say that, you know what, we did sign on this contract, but it was a shtar amana, which I'm going to explain better in just a moment. So, eino ne'emanim, witnesses cannot say that the document was a shtar amana. And again, I'll explain what that is in just a moment. And moda hayu devareinu eina emanim. And when witnesses come and later report that, yeah, we signed on the sale document, but you know what? He served notice. And let's assume for now that when they say he served notice prior to the sale, that the sale was in fact not going to be a good sale. And that he was being forced. So, ein ne'emanim, they are not going to be believed. So Rav Nachman's basically telling us that when I have witnesses, edim, who come along and say that there was a modar, there was some sort of serving of notice that I'm being forced, and therefore I am not really in agreement to what I'm about to do, so Rav Nachman says they're not going to be believed. So we are at odds right now between Rav Huna and Rav Nachman. Rav Huna says, shtar modar, that's good. That works. Rav Nachman says that when witnesses come and say that the guy served notice, so it doesn't work. So let's get to the answer. I still have a lot of explaining to do. I didn't explain what a shtar amana was yet. But I'll just first read the answer of the Gemara, and then I'll go back and I'll do a better job explaining everything. So the Gemara says, Hani mili alpeh, delo asi alpeh omar l'shtara. So the Gemara says, well, that's when the witnesses come and say orally that notice was served, that he was being forced. However, ava b'shtara, but if it was documented, asi shtara omar l'shtara. So once it was documented that notice was served, so then one shtar is going to beat out the other shtar that says that the sale was in fact a valid sale. So if it's word against shtar, that doesn't work. If it's shtar against shtar, well, that will work, and that's the way we're going to balance Rav Nachman and Rav Huna. When Rav Huna said that the writing of a moda is a good document, that's talking about shtar. That's when the actual moda was written up, serving of notice, and witnesses actually wrote up. I don't know what the text is of the shtar moda, but in other words, some sort of document was written up. I'm under duress. I'm being forced to sell it, and you have two witnesses signing on that. That shtar now is good, and if there is a later sale document, so the shtar moda will negate the later sale document. If, however, it's just alpeh, so that's not going to, in of itself, that's not going to be good. Because the
shtar moda is before.
Oh, well, I'll clarify that point also in just a moment. Okay, a lot to go over with over here in terms of the Gemara. So, point number one. Two things that Rav Nachman said. First thing that Rav Nachman says is shtar mana, that if witnesses say that this document was really a shtar mana, so it's not going to be a good, they're not going to be believed. So first and foremost, the definition. What is a shtar mana? So if you take a look at the bottom Rashbam, on Mem Chesam and Beis, he writes, lo hilval klom, So what is Sharmana? Is explains the Rashman is basically as follows. It's a note that we're going to write up, even though it doesn't really represent an actual loan. I'm going to lend you the money, and you will write up a document for me now, dated now, and even though that the loan will not materialize until when you actually come over and tell me you need the money. Now keep in mind, as the Rashman points out, once a malva has a loan document in his hand, so now it's a collectible, it's an account receivable, it's an actual collectible. And he could take at any point in time he wants that shtar, bring it to base and say he owes me money. Now, why would somebody write it up? So the Rashbam over here gives one reason, and that is basically an anticipation of a loan. Meaning that the borrower is so desperate for money that he's ready to write it up now, and he trusts that the malva won't actually come to collect it until the loan actually materializes. But, in other words, but you're writing it prior to the actual loan itself. The problem is, as the Rashbam himself points out right over here, is that now, in terms of the date of the shtar comes well before the loan actually begins. And as we know, every time you're writing a shtar, so there's a lien created from the shtar, and the lien now is going against the properties of the loveh, but shlo kedin, but it's not right, because the loan didn't actually materialize yet. So that's one reason why your shtar money is written up. Elsewhere, when the Gemara talks about Sharmana, so Rashi, forgive me, I don't have a Rashi, you know, to point to right now, but the Rashi gives another reason why you want to write up a Sharmana, and basically it's to look wealthy. In other words, you go to somebody and say, look, you know, I'm in a position where I need a little bit of money, and I have tons of account receivables. And so you start showing off your paperwork. Look, this guy owes me this, and this guy owes me that, and that. I got account receivables, I'm good. In other words, I just have, you know, I have cash flow issues. I have liquidity issues, but I got a lot of incoming money. So a person would want a shtar mana just simply to show others that he has means, and you know he will come into money. Another reason why a person want to write up a shtar mana. Either way, the halacha is very clear, and we're going to detail in just a moment. It's wrong. Meaning, the Rashman says it's wrong. I mean, if you're writing up a loan document and there was no actual loan, so whatever the reason is that you did it, it doesn't matter. It's wrong. It's simply wrong to write up a shtar mana. Yeah.
It's a line of credit. What you're doing is signing for a line of credit.
Right, but the document itself is disingenuous in that it gives the impression that the loan already transpired. Right. In other words, it's not just where I'm simply saying I'm going to extend to you credit. The shtar mana actually says that the loan transpired and you lent me and you lent me the money and I'm ready to pay you back. So it's only disingenuous. I understand your point, but it's disingenuous because this contract gives the impression that the loan already took place. Okay. So the so when witnesses come forward and say, now again, the document looks good, looks perfectly legitimate, looks like a regular loan document. And then the witnesses come and say, oh, but we'd like to report the following. It's not a real loan document, it was a shtar mana. So they're not going to be believed. Now, why are they not going to be believed? So Phil already said it, or at least one of the reasons why. So Phil said because it's too late. The Rashbam gives two explanations of why it's so, and Rashbam's first one fits in right with what Phil said. Let's see the Rashbam inside. Mem Tesam and Aleph. It's a long Rashbam, but it's really important. Lo mi bayim ksav yadim yotzim emakam achid lo mehemna lakro delava pesha aser o pesha yeter ika. So the Rashbam says, I'll tell you what. We'll say a chiddush and we'll see even a bigger chiddush. Even if their signatures can be verified outside. So in other words, they're given no credibility whatsoever because we don't need these witnesses anymore. The Rashbam says, under those circumstances, they're not going to be believed. And he says, and that's fine. But we'll take it one step even further. And that is, El afilo heinatz mam mekayim amoso. Even if they're the witnesses who are actually validating their own signature, meaning we know that every document needs notarization. And to notarize the document, you have kiyum shtar, right, the verification of a document, and one of the ways that a document can be verified is with the original witnesses coming in, testifying in front of court. That's our signatures. And because we need their verification, so they're extended a certain amount of credibility. And the Rashbam says, and now I'll tell you even a bigger chiddush. Even under these circumstances, if they want to come in and report that this star is a star mana, it's not, they're not going to be believed. Why? Look, we signed on the document, but really, it's not a real loan document. It's just a shtar amana. It was fictitious because the loan didn't actually happen yet. It's going to happen, or like I explained earlier, it could be that he's just trying to show off that he's wealthy, whatever. Whatever reason they wrote it up, but it's not real. It doesn't really reflect the loan. Ein ne'emanim. Why? Demi'ach shahodu shebekashus nichtav hare chasim asashar ki'ilu he'idu be'beistin kol ma shekosav v'shtar. Because when you sign on a document, we have a basic rule, says the Rashbam, and that is anytime you sign on a document, that's it. I just went from Hebrew to English like that. It was as if you, whatever you're signing on, is being validated and verified and testified in court. And we have a basic rule, and that is as follows. Once you submit your testimony to court, so that you cannot recant on that testimony and you cannot submit new testimony. It's a basic rule. And the Gemara Ksuvos also indicates this as well. And that's why once they signed on the document, even though it hasn't been verified, and even, says the Rashbam, even though they're the ones who themselves are going to verify the document through the testimony of their own signatures, it doesn't matter. That is one reason why they're not going to believe that's a shtar mana.
Well, we can't even say we believe them. It's just too late. Right.
Well,
we can't say we believe him. You're right.
In other words, right. This, correct. It's the same idea. It's kevin shehigish shuvein chozer magid. You can't resubmit testimony. And the old yesh tam. Now I'm going to skip a little bit in the Rashbam, and I'm moving down now to about 20 lines down from the beginning of the Rashbam. The first word in the line is lishtara. The old yesh tam acher gabe amanu hayudvari amayin amanim. So there's another reason why we're not going to believe them. That's the following. Kedam and ami asam amar rav ha. And he goes basically through the Gemara over there in Ksuvos. And the Gemara over there basically, again, addresses the same point. Even if I need their verification to say that the star is going to be a good star, I'm still not going to believe them. Why? Why aren't they believed? Because there's a prohibition. A person is not allowed to have a shtar mana. And therefore, now we're throwing out the word isser. It's prohibited. So now, what essentially are they saying about themselves? We were involved in an isser. So they're testifying that they were involved in an isser. What's the principle? Rashbam of it says, Mishum Shenemar, Al Tishkan Ba'olecha Avla, Bekevan De Avlahi, Edem Avla Lo Chasme. You cannot be part of such an Avla. It's a sin. It's terrible. And Vechi Amar Chasam No Ein Naman De Ein Adam Naman Be'edus Kishem Mesim Atzmo Rasha Be'edus Zu Kedamar Asam. Ein Adam Mesim Atzmo Rasha. A person cannot give incriminating testimony about themselves. And when they say, hey, you know, we did sign on it, but it was a shtar amana. Since the Navi describes the shtar amana as an avla, the Gemara understands the pasuk that it's talking about an avla, and this, since basically now they're incriminating themselves as they are testifying, they say that we signed on a document that is an avla, so therefore they can't do that because that's incrimination of oneself, and ein adam ma'asem atzmo rasha. So there are two svaras in the Rashbam in terms of why it is not believed about a shtar mana, to put it succinctly. One is kevin shehigish shuvein chozer magid, that once they submitted testimony, they cannot resubmit testimony. Or two, because it's such an issur to be a part of a shtar mana, so we have the principle of ein adam ma'asem atzmo rasha. Okay.
So the logic would take the opposite. If you say ein adam ma'asem atzmo rasha, then obviously they're telling the truth. You see, the logic sounds to be the opposite.
Oh, okay, no? Well, we have the principle, in other words.
But the principle tells you
We could talk further, but that's okay. Those are the two pshatim and the Rashbam. Okay, now so again, let's go back to our Gemara. So again, Rav Nachman says that when a person says that yes, we signed on the loan document, but it was a shtar mana, so they can't. They're just simply not believed. Again, shuvin kevin sheiga shuvin chazamagid or ein adam esim atzmo rasha. The second statement of Rav Nachman was that when they come and say yes, we signed on the sale document, but there was a notice serving of notice done beforehand, where they said, where the guy said, who the guy who was selling it, I'm being forced to do so. And Rav Nachman says, they are not going to be believed about that. And on the other hand, Ravuna says that if you sign on a shtar mada, it's going to be good. So the Gemara's distinction was, well, the difference is between whether or not they're just simply testifying or whether it was documented. Now the Gemara says, peh against shtar doesn't work. Shtar against shtar, that is going to work. Now in that regard, how does that answer work? So once again, I turn to another Rashbam. I'm skipping one Rashbam. Omishane Hanimili, and the Rashbam over here, this is a Rashbam's comment on the Gemara's answer of how to understand Rav Nachman versus Rav Huna. The Rashbam writes, Omishane Hanimili, deinem manem ala peh, shimi idem achshav. So the Rashbam says, yeah, you know what's happening? It's very simple. The sale document was written up. And now, after the sale document was written up and signed by the witnesses, then the witness says, oh, but wait one second. Here's an important detail. He served notice prior to the sale. Okay, now it's too late. It's too late. Right? And what are they trying to do? They're trying to negate the testimony that the shtar itself is saying, and shenasa kimishnechu some edusim ebeisim mishas shenechtav venechtam, and once they signed on the document, that's it. Like I said a moment ago, that information now is as if it's submitted and testified in front of court, and now they're trying to make new edus ein edus acharam evatos arishon. You can't have now new edus going and contradicting edus that was said previously. And again, the Rashbam writes kevish egish shaven chozer magid lo. That's why it's the oral can't beat the test, it can't beat the written. So the way the Rashbam explains it, by the way, it's not so much a function of it's word against paper. That's not really the issue. The issue, the way the Rashbam seems to present it, is the word is good because the word is edus. The problem is that the paper is also edus. And the paper, the sale document, preceded their oral testimony. And it just, from the Rashbam, the real issue seems to be just a question of order. You can't have a sale document and then afterwards say, oh, but he served notice. Too late. But if gone in sequentially the right order, where first the witness is signed on the serving of notice, then I'm being forced and I'm not really going to sell it, and then you have the sale document. So now you're in the proper sequence, and because you're in the proper sequence, so therefore the shtar moda is in fact going to negate the sale document. Adkan. We're back to the Gemara Gufa. We're four lines down on Mem Tesam and Aleph, continuing in the Gemara on this discussion of Rav Nachman. So, Rav Nachman says that when a person tries to testify, hey, I know I signed on a loan document, but it's not real. It's just a shtar mana. They're not believed. Again, for the reasons we said earlier. And if they try to say that, yes, we signed on the sale document, but it was forced, and we were there, and we saw the compulsion. So they're not going to be, and he served notice. They're not going to be believed as well. Those are the two statements of Rav Nachman. Omar Baravashi Amar, Amanu Yidvarenu, Einam Nemanim. Mar Baravashi agrees only with half of Rav Nachman's point. When the witnesses come and say the loan document is not real, it's fictitious, there was no real loan, it was just a shtar amana, so they're not going to be believed, like we said earlier. However, Modayu Yidvarenu Nemanim. However, if the witnesses come and say, yes, the sale document is a good sale document, but he told us prior that he was being forced and it was under compulsion, they are going to be believed. My taima, shezen itan likasev, zelon itan likasev. And the difference is as follows. And it's very simple. Because shtar mana should never be written down. Like we quoted in the Rashbam a couple minutes ago. It's an avla. It is just simple. It's a perversion. It's something that should not be done. A loan document where there's no actual loan, and it's done for, again, whatever the reasons why it's done, it should not be written up, and therefore it's an avla, and therefore it should never be written down. So for witnesses to come at any point in time subsequent to the loan document's writing and saying, it was a shtar amana, they're not going to be believed, because no one should be part of the writing of such a document. However, shtar moda, nothing's wrong with a shtar moda. In fact, it's a good thing. Meaning, if somebody really is being forced to sell something and he doesn't want to, and he knows that he's not going to withstand the duress, and he wants to block the sale, so he will write up a shtar moda prior to that. Now, it should be that you should write up the shtar moda prior to that. But if the witnesses come and say, we were there, part of the sale, and prior to the sale he told us, I'm under duress and I'm serving notice and I'm under duress, so then it's going to be good. Even though they're saying it afterwards, but according to Marbar Ravashi, the reason why it's acceptable is because that's the kind of document which really could have been written down, and they didn't have time, whatever the circumstances were, but since it's a legitimate document, therefore the witnesses are believed. Okay. Halfway down on the Amud V'lo Le'ish Chazaka B'Nechzei Ishto. The Gemara now goes on to discuss that a man does not have a chazaka when he occupies his wife's property, to which the Gemara says Peshitta. Now, isn't that really obvious? Meaning, look, a marriage involves a husband and a wife going into a relationship where there is a financial end to the relationship, which is that when a woman goes in with property, so again, the two types of property, there's Nechzei Tzon Barzel, Nechzei Malug, we're focusing on the Nechzei Malug. The Nechzei Malug property that she comes in with, so her husband is going to be assuming not ownership, she is the owner of the property, but he's entitled to all the peros. So all the yield and all the produce of that field is just simply part of the financial relationship, the quid pro quo that exists between the husband and wife. And so therefore, it is expected that the husband is going to be sitting on his wife's property, enjoying the fruits of his wife's property. And being that that's the case, so the Gemara is asking a very simple question. Being that that's the nature of every marriage, really there's no chiddush. You're telling me that every time a husband and wife get married, and the husband's sitting on his wife's property for 5, 10, 15, 20, 25 years, however the length of their marriage, and then afterwards he can no longer claim, hey, you know what, I own it because I've been occupying it. Of course you don't own it. That's the nature of marriage. And the Gemara's question over here is very simple. It's really, it's so obvious, I didn't need the Mishnah to teach me this point. It's part of the institution of marriage, peros. And therefore, he's eating the peros. Why didn't she challenge over all these years? Because that's what marriage is. Marriage is, he sits on her property and eats the fruit. So the Gemara says, okay, so we're going to add a chiddush over here, and that's the following. The chiddush that we're adding is that he says, now we'll explain in just a moment when he says it, but he says, you know what, I withdraw myself from your property. So even though the Chachamim gave me an entitlement to enjoy the fruit of your property, so I am excusing myself from this property, and now he writes it out. Now we'll talk about the efficacy of such a contract in just a moment. But he writes it out and he hands it to her. And now he basically withholds himself from the fruits of this property. And now he occupies the field. And now he's been sitting and eating there, eating the fruit. And now post-marriage, he wants to make the claim, you know, I've been here all these years and I've eaten the fruit. And you should know, I know a husband normally gets the fruit of his wife, but I excuse myself from it. And so now by virtue of the fact that I've been sitting on this property, therefore I'm the owner. And now the chiddush of the Mishnah is, even under those circumstances, we say to him, that is not a chazaka. You do not get ownership of the property, even though you wrote dinu dvarim.
Why isn't that case in the Mishnah?
Meaning, it is the Mishnah. Right? In other words, the Mishnah's point is so obvious that basically what you have to do is insert Chiddush and Mishnah. So when the next time you read the Mishnah and you're reading the case, we're inserting this Chiddush into the Mishnah. I know, it's not there, but you have to say something novel and new in the Mishnah, otherwise what would be the point of the Mishnah? So the Gemara is saying, fine, that's the Chiddush of the Mishnah. So to which the Gemara says, really? In other words, really meaning, it's a fair Chiddush, it's fine. But like we've seen already a number of times, and the Gemara here is going to report it again, you can't just simply excuse yourself from a partnership. Meaning you're involved in a partnership. You can take your shares and sell them to somebody, But you can't just simply withdraw from your shares. Now, over here, in terms of the husband and wife, I understand partnership is not the best way to describe it. It's really a rabbinic institution, but for our purpose right now, let's just call it partnership. Just so that we can wrap our head around the idea. So if he has now a partnership in the property of his wife, so for him to write dinu dvarim einli, like I'm just excusing myself, that language, from a legal standpoint, doesn't affect any kind of change whatsoever. And the Gemara asks this very question. The Gemara says, now when you write this, it doesn't mean anything. And we learn back, this takes us back to Ksuvos. And we also quoted this earlier in the Masechta as well. Let's say a person says, you know I am a partner of this field, but that's it. I'm out. Ainly Asik Bob, I got nothing to do with it. Yadim is Sulakas me menu. My hand is being removed from this. Lo am or klum. Legally, that's nothing. You can't just simply back out. That in of itself doesn't create a transaction. You want to make a kinyan, that's one thing. But to just back out, that doesn't have legal significance. So, when the husband says to his wife, hey, you know all that fruit that I'm partner with in your field? I'm backing out. Even as we're saying that's the Chiddush of the Mishnah, the Gemara is just simply bothered by the legalities of that just doesn't have any kind of legal significance. Either way. In other words, the language... Understood. But in other words, the statement in word or even in writing just doesn't have any legal significance. So the Gemara says, you're right. Generally speaking, when once you're a partner and you just simply say I'm out, so in of that statement in of itself does not have any efficacy and it doesn't mean anything. It's not going to change anything. However, if we're walking into an event where you will become a partner or you will get some sort of rights to something, and prior to that you say, "Hey, I know it's coming and I want to block it." So then this language works. And the Gemara goes on to explain. So the Gemara says, Masnisin because Divlava Oda Arusa. So here's the case the Mishnah is describing. You're going into Erusin. And when you're going into Erusin, so prior to the marriage, so in other words, keep in mind, where are we right now in terms of the relationship? So we are married, meaning Erusin means that we went through the first stage of marriage. But on the other hand, however, all the financial quid pro quo, all the financial responsibilities, privileges that the husband and the wife get from one another don't kick in yet. And they will not kick in until the second stage of marriage, until Nisuin. So, and it's interesting because it seems like from the Gemara, and Rishonim make this point, not the Rashbam, and it seems from the Gemara that you can't make such a statement prior to the Erusin because it's just simply too early at that point in time. So, but in other words, you know it's coming. Meaning, once you get to the second stage of marriage, Nisuin, so all the financial obligations and privileges now go back and forth. So prior to that moment, you say, you know what? I know I have Peros coming my way, blocking. I'm going to block the Peros. So under those circumstances, it works. Masisim Bekosev Lavoda Rusa, Uchid Rav Kahana, Damar Rav Kahana, and the Gemara says that this was a statement made by Rav Kahana. We turn to Mensesam and Beis. Nachla Habalo La'adomi Makom Acher. When you have an inheritance coming from another place. Adam Masna Alaha. Shalo Yoshano, a person can say, you know what, I'm not going to inherit it. Now, on this we need clarification. The Gemara immediately gives us clarification. Ukida Rava. When now specifically this goes in alignment with Rava, which is Kalaomer Yesh Takanas Chachamim Kigon Zos Shamim Lo. When a person wants to block Takanas Chachamim, meaning if there's a financial benefit coming his way as a result of a rabbinic decree, so then he can block it. Now we'll give the example in just a moment, but basically here's what we're saying, and this is an important point. Meaning, we are now saying that Dinu Dvarim does have some sort of legal efficacy. When would that be? So, when you're trying to block something that you haven't gotten yet. But however, the Gemara says, even though we're saying that that's true, it's not. It's going to be under limited circumstances. It's when you're going to get a right or a privilege in your direction, and when it's a right or a privilege that the Chachamim dictated. If the Torah dictated that you're going to get it, so then you can't block it. So like, for example, if we're talking about a regular Yerusha, right, and you're the son, and you're now going to say, look, I know I have this big inheritance coming my way, but I don't want it. and you even write dinu dvarim, like in other words, I'm excusing myself from that inheritance. You can't do that. The Torah decrees that the estate goes from the father down to the son. So that's something where dinu dvarim is not going to work. In other words, just to simply write that I excuse myself from it, even though you're writing up an anticipation that it's going to happen, it's not going to help. If it's a din derabanan or a takana derabanan that's coming in your direction, and now prior to you getting it, you write dinu dvarim, under those circumstances, it's going to work. The Gemara says, I'll give you an example of such a phenomena. We are three lines down. My kigon zos. So give me an example. What does that mean, kigon zos? So the Gemara says, I'll give you an example. Let's say the woman could say the following to her husband. Eini nizonis ve'eino osa. Where the woman says to her husband as follows: look, I know that you have an obligation to support me. I know that, and I also know that my maisi yadayim, that any earnings I make go to you, and that's part of the quid pro quo of a marriage. Meaning, he has an obligation to support her, and in the event that she works, so her earnings are going to go to her husband. But she says to her husband, look, Baruch Hashem, I'm doing really good. And I don't need your mazonos. And so what I would like to do is I'd like you to keep your mazonos, and I'd like to keep my maisi yadayim. So Rav's of the opinion, Rav Huna quotes in the name of Rav, perfect, works. In other words, she can make such a stipulation, even though the Chachamim instituted that she's entitled to the mazonos. So what do you see over here? That when you want to block a rabbinic institution, a financial rabbinic institution coming your direction, you have every right to do so. So now going back to our Mishnah, let's bring it back full circle. Going back to our Mishnah says that when the husband sits on his wife's property, so it's he can never claim that he has a chazaka. And to which the Gemara said, isn't that obvious? Of course he doesn't get a chazaka. In other words, that's the nature of marriage. And the Gemara says, okay, insert chiddush. What's the chiddush we're inserting? Where the husband says to the wife, you know what? I don't want to eat the payers of your land. I know that's a rabbinic institution coming my direction, so I don't want it. So after marriage, it's too late. He can't say that. Because once the marriage occurred, meaning the second stage of marriage, so that's it, he's got it, and it's not something where he could just simply walk away from or back out of. The dinu dvarim line is not going to work. However, if it's during erusin, and he knows it's going to come, and he wants to block it from coming, so that he's allowed to do. You're allowed to block a rabbinic institution coming in your direction prior to it happening. That's the case of our Mishnah. Now again, it's an extraordinarily limited case now of our Mishnah. Meaning, he's blocking her payers, he's doing so during the erusin, because after the nisuin he's not allowed to do so. So he's blocking her payers during the erusin, and the Mishnah is teaching us that even though he successfully blocked the payers, and he's been on the field for all those years, he still doesn't have a chazaka. Why not? Because that's just simply the nature of marriage, where they have such a relationship, it's expected that he's going to be on her field, even if he's not entitled to the payers.
He can't do it after his most of it, he has an opinion.
He not can't...
verbally, like, wouldn't it? He can't do it.
He can't do it.
It has to be an act of opinion that she...
So now the Gemara is going to launch into the next discussion. I'm going to pause here in terms of the Gemara, because quite frankly this next discussion goes well into tomorrow's daf. Basically the Gemara is going to ask a question: even if she actually sells the property, meaning we've been talking about how the husband doesn't get kinyan chazaka if he sits on the property for multiple years, three plus years, but what it sounds like, however, is that if she actually legally sells the property to him, so it sounds like in of itself that would be fine. And the Gemara says, but generally speaking, she has a way of excusing that kind of behavior. We'll talk more about it tomorrow. Okay, we'll leave the ride discussion for tomorrow. So let's just quickly recap. We finished off today the discussion of the Gemara Tulu Vezavin, a for sale. For sale is going to be, in fact, a valid sale. This is Rav Huna's position, and to which the only thing that would negate a sale, even if a sale is under duress, is only going to be a moda. Only if there were serving notice. Serving notice can only be done prior to the actual sale itself. It'd be best if the serving of notice was documented and signed by witnesses, but even if it wasn't documented and signed by witnesses, as long as he said to witnesses prior to the sale, I'm under duress and therefore I'm serving notice that this is all being done against my will, so that's called a moda, and that would negate a sale, even a forced sale. Shtar amana, we spoke at length today. Shtar amana is not good, and witnesses who say that the document was a shtar amana are not going to be believed, either because of kevin shehigish shavin chozer magid or because of ein adam mesim asatz marasha. And we discussed that Mar Bar Avashi disagrees with Rav Nachman. A person is not believed by a shtar amana, like Rav Nachman said, but a person is believed about a shtar moda, even if they testify afterwards, but they're testifying that it actually occurred beforehand. What the difference is, Shtar Moda is a legitimate document and can, in, under certain circumstances, should be written down. And then we finished off our discussion today regarding a cheskas Baal on his wife's property. The Mishnah says he'll never have a chazaka. The Gemara says that point's so obvious, well, I don't even need the Mishnah. And the Gemara says that even if he's able to block the peros, which the Gemara details that it can't, That in of itself is not simple, but in the event that he were to block the peros of his wife, so therefore he's not entitled to the peros, and he's still occupying the property, that still doesn't create a chazaka, because a husband is going to be on his wife's property, and it's expected, and the Gemara says it's therefore not a chiddush. I'm sorry. Therefore, that's the chiddush of the Mishnah.